Welcome to the Architect My Life podcast. I'm Maya Schlachter, serial entrepreneur and CEO of the MGS Global Group, where we serve architecture and design firms with project delivery, such as drafting, 3D visualization, and graphics production support. I am also the founder of Architect My Life. My goal is to help creative entrepreneurs such as architects and other design-related professionals scale their business to six or seven figures. I also show them how it's possible to do this while living a rich life outside their work, reclaiming time and energy for themselves and their families. Creatives were taught how to master their craft, but not taught how to run and grow a business. Each podcast episode features a different entrepreneur from the creative industry who shares their journey towards success. If you have a growth story that others in our community could benefit from hearing, stick around to the end of the show to see how you could be a guest in one of our future episodes. Now, let's dive into this episode.
Welcome to the Architect My Life podcast, where we interview creative entrepreneurs on their journey. I am your host, Betty Quimby, and today we have Susie Anetta. She is the founding editor of Design Anthology. And Susie and Aya has told me so much about you, and actually, Aya is joining us today. Aya is the founder of Architect My Life. So, hi, Aya, welcome.
Thanks for having me. And Susie, thank you so much for agreeing to be interviewed in this podcast. Susie and I have been working together for, well, we worked on a project collaboration 11 years ago when she was an interior designer doing a major hotel in Hong Kong, a boutique hotel in Hong Kong. But I've never actually seen Susie until 2 weeks ago. But I'm really excited because I've been following Susie's career for, you know, the last few years. And I'm just blown away by everything that you're doing, Susie.
And it's really sweet. Thank you.
Yes, because like the thing is, you've created this platform and you highlight all these amazing architects and designers. And it's good to hear their stories. But I want Architect My Life to highlight your story, so we can share your story to our audience and to yours as well. So, Betty Jean, take it away. I'll be around.
Okay. Thank you, Aya. Thank you. So, Susie, you know, I researched a little bit about you online and see that you're the founding editor of Design Anthology. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Sure. So Design Anthology was founded 7 years ago, and I can't believe that that was 11 years ago that we worked together. That kind of blows my mind a little bit. So I was an interior designer. That was my training, although that was actually the second, phase of my career, but maybe we can come back to that later. I took a bit of a break. I had a studio. I was based in Hong Kong, and as I said, I was working on a hotel and I was doing a lot of residential projects, and I thought that I was where I had been working towards my entire life, which was having an interior design studio and doing those kinds of projects. And it's hard to explain what actually happened. I think I had a bit of an early midlife crisis perhaps, and realized that I was not loving what I was doing, and I was really quite taken aback by that and didn't really know how to deal with it because I had been working towards that for so long. So I took a couple of months break, and in that period of time, that was really when I sort of decided to start Design Anthology. So I think the idea for the magazine goes back quite a long way. I grew up in a small town on the coast of Australia, on the south coast. And I'm going to give my age away now, but this was obviously pre-internet, and growing up in a small town, you know, books and magazines particularly were really the only way to connect with the rest of the world and kind of feel like you were part of a community. And so I was spending, you know, whatever money I could scrounge together to buy design magazines and obsessed over them all of my life. So I think I had always been a big fan of print and of books and of magazines and reading, obviously, and had appreciated media, I suppose. I started a blog not long after I moved to Hong Kong, actually, and that's about 15 years ago now. And that might have been maybe the second seed that was planted, I suppose. But essentially, Design Anthology was started because I felt like there was no magazines in Asia that really were highlighting and showcasing great design in the region and kind of providing them with a really high quality platform. I had grown up with beautiful magazines in Australia. You know, I also have years worth of Architectural Digest and El Decor from the US. So, you know, there was this culture of really great design magazines, but I hadn't seen that in Asia. And so the short version of the story is I decided to create one. So that's how Design Anthology came about.
Wow, I love that. And so you moved to Hong Kong and created it there, yes? That's where
I did.
The birth of it.
Yeah, I had been in Hong Kong for probably about 7 years before we started the magazine, and I was in Tokyo for 3 years before that. So I've actually had been in Asia for quite a long time, but it was during the time in Hong Kong that the magazine was born, I suppose.
Wow.
You could say.
And so my question with that is, like, that to me, and I grew up here in the States, that seems like a huge leap to move to Japan. Like, how did you, like, what led you down that path, and how did you have the courage to actually just move to Japan from Australia?
Yes.
It was a boy. It's not as courageous as it sounds. I followed a boy.
Oh, okay. That's important, though. Okay.
Yeah. Well, that boy is now my business partner. We ended up getting married. We're not a couple anymore, sadly, but we've sort of found a place where I think, you know, we have a very good friendship and a very strong partnership, and we're able to run the business together. So Phil is our managing editor. We started the magazine together, essentially. I'm the visual person. He's the wordsmith. Okay. But, yeah, that was how I ended up in Japan. I followed him. We went back to Australia. We got married. We bought a house. And I'm sure that our families were hoping or expecting that the next natural step would be that there would be children. And when I said that we had great news, they were all, you know, and I was like, no, I'm sorry, but we're leaving Australia again. And I moved to Hong Kong because I had a job offer with the same company that I was working for in Japan. And of course, I've only just moved home, but there's no grandkids for them, and I'm single. So I don't know that they're particularly thrilled with how all of that worked out, but anyway.
Oh, wow.
So Susie, sorry to interrupt. I thought, because I saw an Annetta also in the magazine. I thought perhaps he was your brother.
That's what a lot of people think.
Yeah,
I feel the need to explain. We were married. We're not now, but it's all good. We work together really well.
Okay. All right. Now it explains it. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of the magazine, I'm very curious about what it means to have a licensed edition of the magazine. What does that even mean?
Right. So Design Anthology was maybe only about 3 or 4 years old when we were contacted by a publisher in London and said, we really like what you're doing. We feel like there is a gap in the market, in the media landscape in the UK. We'd really like to start a new edition of Design Anthology for the UK or the European market. And that conversation went over a couple of years. I think it was launched in 2018. So essentially it's like a franchise, I suppose. They pay to license the use of the Design Anthology brand. And our edition in Asia very much focuses on the Asian design scene. Their publication focuses on the UK and Europe. We can't say Europe anymore because of Brexit. So it's both markets. And in late 2019, we launched a third edition that we also publish out of Hong Kong, which focuses on Australia and New Zealand.
Wow.
So there's now 3 separate titles.
That is really impressive. That's so cool. Wow.
So I have a question. So if I go to DA online, is that for all of them or is there different editions?
There's 2 separate websites. So we have one consolidated website that is content from Asia and Australia. So we've got a bit of an APAC happening online. And then the UK edition has its own separate website.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Yeah.
Impressive.
That's so cool.
Thank you.
So with all of this in mind, you were talking about how your career path, you said, we'll get back to that. Well, now's the time to talk about how you've pivoted your career and so many times in the creative industry. And what were the turning points for you that you decided to switch? Because I understand you were a textile designer. Or you went from one to the other, interior design.
It was textiles first.
Textiles,
yeah.
Interior design to then the editor.
And then media, yeah.
Okay, so what pivoted?
It's a bit of a long, winding story. I had a very unconventional career and education path, I think. But when I was growing up in Australia at that age and that time, I thought I wanted to be an architect, actually. So that was my first sort of exposure to the design world. I was quite obsessed with space and floor plans, and was a bit of a nerd with all of that stuff. I would come home from somewhere and try and recreate floor plans. And I think it might have been a careers day at school that I was talking to an architect about, you know, it was at that stage where you start to choose subjects before you go to university. Right. And, you know, I was super creative. I was doing art, which was based on history. We had a studio art class where we would stretch our own canvases and paint. I had a graphic design class. I was doing textiles. Wow. So it was about all creative as you could. I think maybe there was one subject of math that was compulsory, and maybe a couple of other subjects. But this architect said to me, yeah, well, you know, you're going to have to drop all of that and you're going to have to do science and maths. And I kind of had this moment where I was like, what do I do now? Because I'm not going to do that. I'm really not great with numbers, and science is not my jam at all. So I had a bit of a moment of trying to figure out what to do. And at that stage, interior design wasn't a very well-established career path. It was interior decorating where, you know, I guess much like it is now, you're choosing pillows and fabrics and paint colours, and it's not particularly well respected. Or the other extreme was architecture. And there wasn't really that middle ground, which I guess we think of as interior design, where it's still very technical and skill-based, but a bit of aesthetic flair involved as well. So that was when I decided to study textiles. So I wasn't actually a textile designer. The course that I did was partly creative, partly technical. I think what I've learnt over the years, it's taken me a while, is that I'm not 100% creative and I'm not 100% a business mind. I think that I'm happiest when I really get to use, it's a bit of a cliche, but both sides of my brain. But I worked in the textile industry for home furnishings for probably the first 8 years of my career. So okay. I was working with interior designers and, you know, the general public who were looking for fabrics for their home. And I loved that, but I think I was kind of getting this inkling of wanting to go back to what I had originally wanted to do. And so I studied interior design online and finished some of that in person at school. And I didn't have my first interior design job until I got to Hong Kong. So I was actually in my early 30s when I made that first kind of big pivot, and it was terrifying. I had done a course on Photoshop and Illustrator, but I hadn't finished the Photoshop component. And all of a sudden I was in this job. We were working on a hotel, custom designing carpets. And I had no idea what I was doing. I was really thrown in the deep end, but I guess I managed to swim instead of sink, that's good. So to speak, and really enjoyed it. But, yeah, so I did that for a couple of years. I worked with that firm and then moved somewhere else and then started my studio, and that was obviously when I met Aya, and then had, you know, that other moment of what am I doing? I'm not sure that this is all that I had hoped that it would be. And took maybe about a 6 month break before realizing that I guess media or starting a magazine might be a really great way to combine all of the things that I love, but also for Phil, who comes from an editing and a writing and publishing background, for us to kind of bring our passions and skills together. So, yeah, that's how Design awesome. Anthology came about.
Wow, that is so cool. And, you know, speaking of like the how you had that moment where you had a break and then you said all these things came to you, like now more than ever, a lot of people are wanting to change jobs and pivot their careers much like you have. So specifically speaking of architects and interior designers who may want to find other job opportunities or a side hustle or something, alternative sources. In your experience, what are some unique jobs that these people may not be aware of or thought of? Like, are there other things? I mean, we're just talking about this market. What are some?
Absolutely. Yeah, look, I think there's a number of things. The two that sort of spring to my mind immediately because I'm in media are writing and photography. I really love working with writers that come from a design background, and whether they've studied architecture or urban planning or interior design, because I think there's a certain language and a certain vocabulary that comes particularly with architecture and design that if you've come from that background, you really know that. And I think there's a really obvious difference to me, at least, between stories that are written by someone who actually intimately knows their subject matter as opposed to a journalist. And I have absolutely nothing against journalists. I really admire and respect what they do. But I think the ones that I've met tend to be a bit more generalist and they can write about anything. But I think what we do in this world is very specific and has a very specific vocabulary. So I think if you lean that way, writing is, I think, a very natural thing to kind of go into. Photography as well. You know, again, we love to work with photographers that come from some kind of architectural or design background because they have, again, this very innate kind of sense of understanding of space, three-dimensional space, and how to capture that. Mm-hmm. So those would be the two first and foremost, you know, suggestions that I would make. But aside from that, you know, there's a number of suppliers that supply the industry and sell product or services that I think would hugely appreciate having someone like an architect that's trained and understands how their product might be implemented and to be able to talk about it in a way that is, again, really informed, I think would be really valuable. So, you know, I think there's a lot of opportunities out there. I'm a big believer that that education is never wasted, that I understand also that architecture is a very long process. It's, you know, a lot of years being educated and trained to do that. But I don't think that that is ever wasted just because you pivot and decide to do something different. So,
cool.
Yeah.
That's
yeah. So
good.
Can I add to that? Now I have a group of women architects and they always ask me, I need to have a side gig or an, you know, side hustle because they need to take control of their financial futures. Right. So when you talk of architecture, photography and content creation, can they monetize that? Because I have a business brain and I want to help these women, like in terms of monetizing it, like what's the best way to make an income?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, honing the craft and the skill first, making sure that you're producing what editors might want. And I guess it depends on who you're hoping to pitch that to, but I guess the easiest and the best way to monetize that would be to reach out to media and see if they need freelance help.
Okay. And I think that's right because a lot of people always look for content. I see that a lot, like big companies, hey, do you want to write? Even like Medium and Thrive Global, they're looking for writers. So yeah, thank you. That's great.
Wow. Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. And in speaking of that, like collaborating, like you're talking about writers, photographers, collaborating with architects, what do you think makes the best creative collaboration partnerships? So what about that?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think it starts from a very shared philosophy or approach, I think. If you have that foundation there and there is a sense of perhaps wanting the same outcome from a situation, then I think that collaborating with people creatively is easier, obviously, but I think then the whole process just becomes incredibly enjoyable. And I think, you know, my feeling is, you know, I also host a podcast series and I've spoken to a lot of designers in the last year. And I think one of the things that has been, you know, across everyone that I've spoken to, regardless of where they are and whether they're architects or interior designers, the thing that stands out to me is that creative people thrive in a collaborative environment. I think that there is this image, and maybe with artists that's happening, that they're sitting in a studio on their own and throwing paint on a canvas. But I think what architects and designers do, you can't do that on your own. It just physically doesn't happen. You can't be an architect and an engineer and interior designer and any of the other sort of allied industries. There is definitely a group and a team effort there. And I think when you get a great group of people together who think similarly and want the same outcome, that process is really pleasurable. And I think that, you know, when you have, what is it, that the sum becomes greater than all of the parts. I'm not sure how that quote goes, but hopefully you understand what I mean.
Yes,
I think, yeah, it's, you know, it's fun. And I think obviously given what we're all still going through and being so isolated is that creative people are really missing that sense of teamwork and collaboration. So I hope that answers your question.
No, absolutely. No, I get it. I totally agree with you and everything you're saying. And yeah, I guess the next thing that I'm thinking of within these collaborations is, what kind of advice would you give someone who's still thinking, like, maybe they're like wanting the side hustle, like I was talking about, or maybe they are thinking about pivoting much like you have? What advice?
Or moving to another country.
Or moving to another country for the man of their dreams.
Yes.
What advice would you give that person who's still thinking, but they're hesitant about, you know, taking the first leap?
Well, you know, I don't know if I'm the best person to ask advice because honestly, I have always just, you know, dived into the deep end, and that doesn't work for everybody. But my motto in life is I'd rather regret something that I did than something that I didn't do. And I think that we spend a lot of time in our lives thinking about things that we would like to do and not necessarily acting on them. I think, you know, we look at things that we would like in our lives perhaps further down the track, and they seem like they're impossible to attain, or that, you know, the barriers or the hurdles might be insurmountable. And so we sort of sit around pondering how we get there without actually taking any action. And sometimes it really is, sometimes it's diving in the deep end and just doing it and figuring out how to make it work, which I've done a number of times in my life. I don't always recommend that, but it's, you know, sometimes it works, but other times it's just a matter of taking one step every day and not feeling like you have to complete the whole journey in one go, that it's day by day, it's step by step. And I think if you're enjoying that process, then it's about the journey and not just about the destination as well.
Awesome. Thank you. That was great. Yeah. I'm like excited now. I mean, excited for the next 3 years.
Yeah,
that's good to hear.
Yeah.
We're going to wrap up soon. I have a couple more questions left. One would be, you said you had a podcast.
Mm.
On your podcast, who would be your dream podcast guest? Anyone. Ooh. But anyone. Like, I'm talking dead, alive, you know them, you don't know them, anyone. Who would be your dream podcast host? Or guest, sorry.
It's a great question. Wow. I don't know where to start. I have to say that one of the best parts about my job at the moment is, and it's something that I really hadn't anticipated, because I was an interior designer before, is actually meeting so many of my idols and people who I have worshipped and whose careers that I've followed for perhaps decades. Actually getting the chance to meet them and talk to them is, you know, an absolute dream and a bit of a kind of a pinch me moment. So, you know, I've already had a number of people as guests that I've really loved, but if I have to pick one name, and it's hard because there'd be so many, but I recently interviewed Simon Rawlings from David Collins Studio, who's based in London, who's, you know, that studio I've followed for decades. But David Collins himself sadly passed away. I don't know if it's a decade now, actually. And I had been in touch with him by email. I was writing my blog at that stage. It was before I'd launched the magazine. And his studio has always been incredibly kind and just really supportive. They're great people and I still love what they do. But I think maybe one of my biggest regrets is that I never got a chance to meet him, and I would have loved to have had him as a guest. I heard that he was, yeah, very charming and very entertaining. So
David Collins, you said?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That's sweet. Well, I'm sorry that he passed, but it's great to know that, to make you think about that, maybe that you hadn't thought about him in a while. So
yeah, he left behind an incredible legacy, so he's not forgotten.
Oh, good. Oh, well, that's awesome. Well, thank you for that. So as we're getting towards the end, I want to know what you're up to next. So
yeah, what's next?
Yeah, like, you've already been to Hong Kong, you're back to Australia, you already did the publication, it's in the UK, it's in Australia, it's everywhere, it's in Asia. Like, we're now what?
Yeah, that's a great question. I had so many things on my to-do list at the start of last year, and then obviously, well, for obvious reasons, I think for the first time maybe ever in my life, I've been kind to myself and thought, I am not going to push myself to do this. It's just, it's not fair. So there's a few things still, you know, on that list that I would like to try and do. We published our first book last year, and I think that's something that we would all like to do more of, myself and my team.
What's the book called?
The book is called Design in Asia, The New Wave, and it was published as a collaboration between Design Anthology and Thames and Hudson.
Okay.
And it focuses on 100 or approximately 100 young product designers from across Asia, so from Japan all the way down to the Philippines.
Yay, I need to get a copy.
Yeah. Because we really, you know, I guess much like the magazine, wanted to highlight just how much wonderful work is coming out of the region. And I think to kind of maybe also bust a few stereotypes that because it's Asia, particularly China, that it's maybe of lesser quality or that, you know, work is being copied. There's a lot of really great creative ingenuity that's coming out from across the region. And it's very different because it's a huge part of the world with, you know, the biggest population of any region. And I think that was perhaps another thing that we wanted to highlight is the diversity within the region. It's huge, it's very different, and it's exciting to watch. So we'd love to do more of that. But I think perhaps the big thing for us this year is actually launching into China. It's probably a surprise to many people that it's taken us this long to do that, considering Hong Kong's proximity. But it's, you know, it's such a huge country, and the language obviously is a bit of a challenge as native English speakers. But we're really excited to, yeah, move into that market and engage with a new audience. We already have a small readership in China, but I think for us to really, really engage, we need to do that in Mandarin. So.
Wow.
That's the big thing. It's pretty big.
It is. I can, yeah. Wow, that's exciting.
Wow. Well, thank you for sharing. You have been a wonderful guest. You are so interesting. You've been all over and you're just so calm. I just can't, like, your aura, you're just like,
you see, it's so down to earth.
I know. It's like, this is
it's an Australian thing, I think.
I do.
Yeah, I have magazines and books.
Yeah, no big deal. Yeah, no big deal.
See, well, I feel like my audience has to, hear this because there are a lot of women aspiring entrepreneurs who are listening. So it's good to highlight people like you who've, you know, taken the big leap and just doing things, right? So it's really
well, I do want to add also that, you know, I'm single and I don't have children, and, you know, I think that obviously the challenges that women face are quite unique and different to the other gender. So it, you know, obviously I don't want to make out like I'm Wonder Woman. I think I've been able to do so much because I don't have other commitments in my life to balance. So
yeah, but also Susie,
too much.
So I also want to point this out. It's okay for women not to have children and not to be married. And people should know that, because other people will say, oh, why isn't she married? Why doesn't she have kids? And also a lot of people in our group also are married without kids, and it's okay. So it's also good for society to know that it's fine, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm 44. I have no intentions of having kids. I'm happy.
And
it's fine.
Okay.
It's all good.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're happy and you're impacting the world on so many levels because maybe, or maybe not because you don't have kids, but you're able to do what you do and do it well. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
And before we wrap it up, I would love for you to tell the audience where we can find you on social media or your website, if you could please tell us that.
Yeah, thank you. So it's www.design-anthology.com is our website. We have two or three Instagram accounts, actually. So each edition of the magazine has its own Instagram account, but ours in Asia is designanthology.asia, I think, and designanthology.au, the Australia. I have to check what the UK one is. Sorry. I don't manage that account, so it's not at the front of my mind. I'm sure it'll be easy to find. And then, yeah, we're, you know, obviously we're on Facebook and a couple of those other platforms, but I think Instagram is probably the most important and the most active because we're so visually led, obviously.
Yes. Awesome. Well, thank you. Again, that's design-anthology is your website. Yes,
it is. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Susie. You've been wonderful. And Aya, thank you for joining us.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And once again, this is Betty Quimby with Architect My Life podcast. Thank you, Susie.
Thank Thank you for listening to the Architect My Life podcast. We'd love to hear from you on social media using the hashtag Architect My Life podcast. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at @Aya_ArchitectMyLife. That's Aya, A-Y-A, _ArchitectMyLife. And for women firm owners, I invite you to join the Architect My Life private Facebook group. If you haven't already, we'd appreciate it if you'd subscribe to the show, as well as rate or review us wherever you access podcasts. And if you think you have something to add to the conversation through your success running a business, we invite you to apply to be a guest in one of our upcoming episodes. Visit architectmylife.com/podcast to learn more. Maybe you're not in a position to share your success story yet. That's okay. Take your business to the next level with our coaching and online courses. Get everything you need at architectmylife.com. Remember, there is a way to manage it all so you can achieve more. I'm Aya Schlachter. Thanks again for listening.